all going to hop on board with me. He might be like, I don't know if I'm going to hop on board with you or not. You will, and I will listen to you do it. Because as we get ready for the sermon, we're going to sing a song together, and everyone here is going to verbally commit themselves to missions of mercy, because it's a phrase drawn from a song that you've probably sang, like, I don't know, 50 times. I kind of think that the future of, like, living, vibrant churches and the message that they need to be great is already in the songs that we sing. We just need to actually do the stuff we're singing. And so be listening for that when we sing the old song, Seeking the Lost. But probably, like, the best way for me to explain missions of mercy to you, not just probably, is just to show you Jesus. Look with me in Luke chapter 19. When you study his ways, you will know what ought to be your ways. If we had our kids in here, our little ones, and I asked them to tell the story of Luke 19, they would start it very well. They would say Zacchaeus was a wee little man. And a wee little man was he, and he climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. It's a great story. We know the story. For most of us, it's a Zacchaeus story, and I think that might be a mistake. In this story, that's how it begins, but I want to finish it with you. Go with me to Luke chapter 19, and I'll pick up here in verse 5. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for today I must stay at your house. And he hurried, and he came down, and he received Jesus gladly. When they, I want you to note that, verse 7, when they saw it, they all began to grumble, saying, he has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Zacchaeus, verse 8, stopped and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I'll give back four times as much. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. That's his mission. I wonder if it ought to be ours. Now, again, I think we've got some preachers in the room. We all have our Zacchaeus sermon. Do I need to preach the Zacchaeus sermon to you guys today? I mean, you're here at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Like, you're A-listers. You're super Christians. You don't need me to take a half an hour going, hey, you need to try to look for Jesus even if you have to climb a tree. And if he decides to talk to you, you need to run down and talk to him and go wherever he tells you to go. And whatever you need to repent of and give back and surrender, do it four times as much just for the right to know him. It's a good sermon. It's right here in the text. But I don't think you need that today. I think maybe with God's people, we've got a mature past challenging you to be like Zacchaeus. You've already done that. And ask you to be more like Jesus. This is not a Zacchaeus story. It's a Jesus story. Here's Jesus carrying on with his day. You think Jesus had important days? I'm pretty sure that he did. I think when Jesus got through praying in the morning and went about his mission and was taking his disciples, that he was on mission to do something that mattered. Maybe he was going to preach a sermon that would affect hundreds of people. And then he looks off to the side and he sees this short little tax collector in a sycamore tree. And he effectively says, guys, pause. Pause the day. Whatever we were going to do today, we're not going to do that now. I need to go talk to this little guy that no one else will talk to. They, verse 7. I need to go talk to him. So he goes over to this tax collector, and he doesn't say, hey, you need to stop the stuff you're doing, and then walks off. All right, Jesus did not do that. He doesn't say, hey, I'm going to go ahead and do what I was doing, but if you know what's good for you, you're going to come down and follow me, and we'll see how it goes. He didn't do that either. Jesus said, I've not only decided to come over and talk to you in a tree, I have changed the entire plan for the day. I've canceled everything else I was doing. I want to spend the day at your house. That's what appealed to Zacchaeus. That the Savior not only knew him and addressed him, but wanted to be near him, to bring salvation to his house. That's the orientation of Jesus. One soul, I want you to think about this. One soul at a time, one soul all the time. Looking for one and addressing that. Now, verse 7, who are the they, do you think? You know who the they are. We're going to get a lot of they in this week and a lot of these lessons. They are the religious leaders of the day. They are the scribes and the Pharisees. They're the in crowd. They're the saved crowd. They're the smartest people in the room. They do it right when no one else does it right. And they have elevated themselves to a place where they believe they are better than a tax collector in a tree. They are not. But they have convinced themselves that they are. They cannot even understand why Jesus would even talk to this guy, much less go to his house and dine with him, and who knows who he might invite from the community. Now, here's the point. We need to move on. We need to be like you need to be like Jesus. But it is easy for us to become like them in verse 7. It is easy for us to be Pharisaical in this way. We're the right church. We do it the right way. We've got it all set up just right. And if you want to come and see us, you come on. You know where we are. It's almost like at our churches, we build like a 6-foot wall around our church building. And somewhere in the back, we put a ladder with 5 steps on it. Follow. And like if somebody can find our address and find the ladder and like perfectly climb the 5 steps and don't break their leg when they fall over onto our side and they're able to like hobble over, we'll find a place for them and we'll start working them through the system. Until we demolish those walls and we become mission-oriented soul seekers like Jesus, we're just dying churches on a long clock, just like the Pharisees did. They eventually devoured themselves, did they not? Trying to find out who's the rightest of the right. I'm getting off topic. I'm going to come back. When what they were missing is that God was putting hurting, disoriented, guilt-ridden people in the trees all around them. The question is, are we ready to see those people? Now, you say, okay, how do we do that? And we're going to talk about that in the worship hour, a little bit of like function. And then tonight, even though we're headed back to the Old Testament, I'm going to give you some like really practical ways that we go about that. But here's the truth of it. The difference between Jesus and the Pharisees was heart. Jesus had a heart for every living, eternal soul that existed. And the Pharisees had a heart for the people like them who could do things for them. So go with me to Luke 15. This is our settling in point for the rest of the morning. Luke chapter 14. Having a heart like Jesus, even incrementally more like Jesus, will transform your purpose. To get to some things I know we'll talk about later, we've got to get away from this idea that being at the right church and catching all of the worship services is the fulfillment of the mission of my life. We get it. You're going to heaven. Keep on singing. But your purpose is not just to log in a bunch of worship assemblies. Your purpose is far more personal, selfless, and important. Not more important than worship, but important in the sense that we're trying to draw people to it, if that's what our heart is destined to do. Luke 15 is where we want to be, and you got the setting. I mean, look at the first 2 verses. We're going to spend the rest of our time right here. Luke 15, now all the tax collectors, verse 1, and the sinners were coming near to Jesus. They're listening to Jesus. And here are our Pharisees and our scribes are grumbling, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. They don't get it. It's messy, it's dirty, and they don't get it. And so Jesus says, here's what I will do. I will tell you 3 stories. And if you can understand these 3 stories, it will completely transform your mission and your life, and I'm going to share those 3 stories with you. You probably already know them. You have the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. And we know the 3rd one the best, the prodigal son, which again is not really a prodigal son story. It's a God story. Stay tuned. But in the story, we go, okay, we know the 3rd one. And I'm kind of a math nerd. Okay, I'm definitely like a total math nerd. And so for me, it's sort of like a math equation. The guy lost 1% of his sheep. 1 out of 100, and then it kind of ratchets up a little bit to 10% of her savings, which starts to get me interested. Okay, I'm there for that. What are we doing? And then half of your children. You see how that's kind of going? And I used to think that it went from less intensity to more intensity, and I don't think that anymore. And I want to show it to you. Can we read this together? I want to begin with the first story, the first parable in verses 3 through 7. Let's start back in verse 1 to get the whole scene. Now all of the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to Jesus to listen to him. Both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So he told them this parable, saying, what man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost 1 of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the 1 which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and he rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I found my sheep which was lost. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Now, I want you to just really stare at verse 7, because that's this whole chapter. Everything he's trying to convey in all three stories is told in a little bit in each story, but it's most clearly told here in verse 7. There is more joy in the heart of God. There is more rejoicing in the courts of heaven over one lost, wayward, dying sinner. Someone who never knew God. I think this story applies to anyone who's outside of the Lord. They grew up and they began sinning, or there's someone who's drifted away from the church. There is more rejoicing when we get one of those people back than over 300, I don't have my glasses, I'm old, 310, is that what it says back there? Than over 310 people singing praises to God. You say, what are you saying? Are you saying our worship isn't important? Our singing, no, of course our singing is important. Our worship is crucially important. But is there a place in your heart to realize that a conversation you have with someone on a Tuesday may bring more joy to your Creator than all of the songs you sing this morning? Like, are we ready to get that? Because I think that's a shift in kind of the way that we build our concepts of what pleases God. Now, he tells this story, and let me tell you, I used to think, well, this first one, you know, it appears a few times in the Gospels. It's not a big deal. Let's move on to one of the others. This is the most important of the three parables to me, because this story reveals something that I have not had the courage to admit until just recently. I am not very much like Jesus. I try to be like Jesus. I want to be like Jesus, but I am not nearly as like Jesus as he wants me to be. Let me explain. This text says, yeah, I'm not a sheep person. I'm from Texas. I don't know what you guys think when you think East Texas. I don't have sheep. I don't have a cowboy hat. I don't have any of that stuff, okay? But in this story, here's what I think. You've got 100 sheep. 99 of them want to be there. One runs off. He said, which one of you wouldn't leave the 99 exposed on their own and go chase down the one that was lost? You know who wouldn't? I wouldn't. I would not go after. I've got 99 sheep who want to be here. Why would I be chasing down one dumb sheep? And especially if it's like his third time to run away. Okay, first time, maybe. Maybe you just got confused. But by the second or third time, it's clear that you are misled. Like, I don't know. How fast do sheep make more sheep? Don't they make sheep pretty fast? Like, why don't we just birth more sheep? We'll be past 100, and we won't ever have to worry about that one again, and he can go out there. He didn't want to be with us anyway. Like, does any of that sound familiar to you? Like, we're a place of people who want to be here. And if you don't want to be in Christ, then you go out there. Jesus said, let me tell you about me. I care just as much about that one who's clearly confused as I do the other 99. He says, I go out and I find them. Now, if I happened to go find the one sheep, I'd probably lecture him when I got there. Or kind of give him one of these or lead him back. Jesus picks up that sheep and puts the sheep on his shoulders and carries the sheep all the way back and places him again among the 99. You know, I think we kind of oversell the father position in the third story. Like, if someone drifts from the Lord, someone in your family drifts from the Lord, someone in this church drifts, or someone you know just kind of grows up and finds their way, you know, we're just going to kind of stand there with our hands like this going, you know where we are. I'm just going to be a father on the porch. I don't think that's the way the father was on the porch, by the way. But you know what we undersell? We undersell what Jesus did. He went and found that person. And he lifted that person up and he brought them back. And I probably wouldn't do any of that, but I tell you this, I don't think I'd throw a party when I got back. Like, let's throw a party over this sheep that I've, for the fourth time, have had to go and get. And if there's anything I'm less likely to do than go after one sheep, it's like attend a party for a guy over his one sheep. Like, unless the refreshments were really good. But like, I'm not, how am I supposed to sell? It's just one sheep. And that's me. That's the guy you have standing in front of you today. You're like, well, then you shouldn't be doing this lesson. But you know, recognition of the difference between me and Jesus. Well, let me rephrase. I use my hands a lot. Between me and Jesus is exactly the thing that, Lord willing, will promote change in my life and yours. This story is crucial to me about finding them and bringing them back. And of course, this is a Jesus story. This is about Jesus as the good shepherd who loves all of his sheep, and he calls for their voice. He calls with his voice and he tries to draw them in. So three stories I want to show you, and that's the first one. The first one is, this reveals that I don't see people like Jesus sees people. I get really comfortable in our crowd. You know, this church is doing great here. You guys are growing, all this positive stuff. We have a lot of that in Lindale as well. And it becomes like, okay, this is just a place for people who get it. You know, you didn't get it before you got here. And there are a lot of people here right now who kind of still don't get it. Stay tuned this week. We're here for you. We love you. But you may be one of the ones wandering even while you sit here this morning. Who cares enough to come after you? This is the first story and to me the most important. I'm not very much like Jesus. Not like I want to be. And I'm working on that. And that's what this week's designed to do. Second story is interesting because it brings in the role of a woman, which is kind of unique in Jewish literature, and it's been taught many times how Luke introduces the role of women and the predominant female characters and all that. But you have three stories here, and I want to ask you about who this woman is. I think the first story is kind of easy. I mean, the shepherd is Jesus. Everybody knows that. Jesus is the good shepherd. He's willing to go. He's willing to get, and we need to think more like him. And I think everybody knows the third story. I mean, if I ask you, who is the father in the father story, you'd be like, it's the father. I mean, it's God. So the first story is Jesus, and the third story of the prodigal son is the father. But if that's the case, then who is this woman? Let's read it together. I need you in Luke chapter 15, and let me read verses 8, 9, and 10. What woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost." In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God, and there it is again, over one sinner who repents. Now again, I used to see this purely mathematically. If you can't get excited about one sheep out of 100, maybe you'll get motivated by 10% of your savings disappearing. And then later, maybe half of your children will get you moving. But in this case, there's something else going on. If Jesus is the shepherd, I think that's probably so, and the father is the father, who is the woman in this story? Now, I know I'm in lecture mode, so you probably won't answer, but let me rephrase it. Who is the bride in the story? Who is the wife in the story? We know throughout Old Testament prophecy and New Testament scripture that the woman in the marriage is the church, that this woman is us. It is you and me. And I used to picture this as like a widow woman who had 10 coins. It's all she had, and she lost one of them, and she's all by herself, and she needs to find it for her future. I don't see it anymore in that way. Instead, I want to suggest it to you like a wife. And there's some interesting research, and you can go back to old commentaries, people like 1,000 times smarter than me, and you can read about what this might have meant in first century time. Let me phrase it for you. It's possible that what's really going on here is that this woman is married to a husband. And when she married him, he gave her a necklace with 10 coins. That was very common in their time. She would have worn this necklace with 10 coins. It's kind of like a wedding ring today. Uh-oh, sorry, it's at home. It's at the. I'll bring it tonight. Perfect illustration of the danger I'm now in. This was not just a necklace. It said something. I belong to him. I have been claimed by this man. This signifies our relationship. Stick with me on that. These 10 coins signify the connection that I have with you. And so for her to lose one of those coins was not just the loss of 10% of her money. It was a disrespect for that relationship. She doesn't care enough about her marriage. She doesn't care enough about who he has made her to be to even take care of the symbol of their connection. And so much so that there's some evidence to suggest that if he came home from work and she only had 9 coins, he would put her away because she didn't care enough about their marriage to hold all of that together. So she's desperate. She's sweeping every corner and lighting every lamp because this represents her marriage, her relationship, her future. And when she finds it, she calls all of her friends and they understand the value of that. So this is ratcheted up from one sheep who cares to a relationship that's very important. And so I want you to think of it in terms of you and I as the church losing a part of ourselves and that not being okay with Jesus. Now, I don't know if that's the way you read this story. As with everything else this week, it's not important that you agree with me, only that you admit that I am correct. But if we understand the flow of this, I want to talk about like the Westin Church for just a minute. I know that you're not uniquely the bride. I mean, the bride is the whole body of Christ, but you are kind of a representation of that. And I want you to think of the 10 coins as all of the Christians who assemble here. All of the people who belong, there's 10, there's 20, there's hundreds of them. And to lose one of our own to the world is to present ourselves to Jesus less than we were. Does that make sense to you? To lose one family of this fellowship, to lose someone to the draw of previous sin, is to now be less than we were, less than whole before our great Maker. Are you afraid, shepherds of this church, members of this, are you afraid of going to God saying, God, we're not what we were. We lost some of the coins along the way. COVID was just a disaster and all the stuff, and we just lost, and you know, they're just out there somewhere, but we have replaced it with other coins. Jesus is going to say, I want the ones who were mine. You should have swept the house. You should have lit every lamp. You should have gotten everybody together and gone and gotten them and put them on your shoulders. Embrace them and bring them home. You say, well, they didn't want to be here. You mean they were kind of like dumb sheep? Oh, yeah, dumb sheep. Well, go get them then. If they're misguided and they're confused. How many of you guys know, and I probably will say it several times this week, but there are people who used to worship. I just got here. There are people who used to worship at this church who are not worshiping God any longer. I think that's probably a fair assumption. Who would love, or at least are interested in coming back, but they are ashamed. They are humiliated. They feel that they will not be accepted, that they don't fit in, that they're not good enough. The question is, have we taught that to them? Because we're standing over here going, you know where we are. You want to come, you come. We're pretty much fine without you. In fact, we're doing really great without you. But if you want to come and sit on the back row or the front row, you know when we meet. That sounds so Pharisaical. Doesn't that sound like something the scribes would do? That sounds exactly like the way they would do. I think one of the things that we need to understand is you already know people who have drifted from God. You have family members, I'm guessing? There are members here. Wouldn't it be awesome? And I'm just suggesting, I just got here, I'm just suggesting, but what if the elders of this church just kind of, and got some deacons together and went through the last like 5 years, 3 years here and wrote down the names of every Christian, every person who's drifted into the world. And they started putting together this effort to go and get them. And they called you into the elder's office. How many of you guys have been called into the elder's office? That is scary stuff. And they call you and you're like, what did I do? Am I in trouble? And they call you in, they set you down. You're like, and they say, let me tell you why I brought you here. We've lost one of our coins to the world. We're not as complete as we were in Christ here. And we think you know that person pretty well. And we believe you can help us sweep the corner and light that part of the room. Would you work with us to go and welcome that person again? And tell them that we love them? And if they need to be carried back, pick them up and carry them back and show them love. You say, well, maybe it won't matter. Maybe they don't want to come back. Look, if the coin doesn't want to be found, it won't be found. But let's not make that our fault. That's what I'm saying. Let's make that a choice by the others. The second story is so important to me because it makes us think locally. And ultimately, autonomy is a really big deal. If you're a member of the West End Church, we're kind of our own functioning bride ship and necklace. And it makes us think about the work that we have to do. And I hope it brings it close to home. I hope you don't leave here today going, boy, I sure wish there was somebody in my life that needed to be encouraged. I would love to go find a sheep. I guess I don't know any. You do know them. You do know them. And I think it's time to go. And the results, I predict, will be amazing. Now, in the story, he says, I've got one more for you. So we get to the first of it, and he talks in a way that's so foreign to us, you know, going after the one. By the way, I taught this about the sheep I think it was in North Kentucky, in Florence, Kentucky. Anybody been up there? Saw the ark. It's big. That's the best thing. It was really big. But I finished talking about this text, and a guy came up to me afterwards, and he's like, well, I'm a sheep herder. And I was like, oh, great. You know, here comes an expert. Straighten me out on this. And he says, you know, after a sheep runs away a couple of times, and he holds up his fingers, he goes, we take them to market. I think I'm just going to let that sit there. I want you to think about that. Take them to market. All right. So then we get into the coin. And again, when you think about the coin, I want you to think about how desperate it is that we present ourselves as unified and complete before Jesus as we can. And then we get to the third story. And we know this one really well. And I could do some reading because, you know, verses 11 and following, this man had two sons. And it's really like one of the most disgraceful things you could have done in that culture is to take your inheritance and go squander it. They all kind of lived close and built their lives together. And this son wants to rip that apart. It was also really outlandish and amazing that the father even gave him half of the inheritance. A very kind of graceful, interesting move on the father's behalf. And you know what happens, the prodigal, before he's prodigal, he goes out there, he wastes it all, he's in the pigsty, and he comes to his senses and he comes back. And if you preach this, if preachers preach this text and they preach about the prodigal and how we go waste our lives and we realize we need the Lord and we need to come back, I mean, it's a good sermon. But this isn't about the prodigal. This is about the love of the Father that is so intense and gracious and incredible that He would even receive back someone who did as filthy a thing as this boy. So I want to pick up, not with the coming to your senses part, I want to pick up in verse 20. Look with me in our text. We're in Luke chapter 15 and we're in verse 20. So he got up and he came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to his father, and I'm kind of convinced he had this big speech prepared. Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. And he's going to like keep going. And the father's like, stop. The father interrupts him and says to his slaves, just stop. Quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand. Put sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf. Kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to celebrate. You know, I don't know why it is that we picture people who are out in the world. I mean, I guess I know why we picture God as upset with them. God is very upset with that when people are caught in sin. But sometimes it's almost like if they want to come back, you can see that God is kind of like, what are you going to give me? How are you going to make up for this? Are you ready to jump through the necessary hoops to get back in the in crowd? If you think that's God, I don't know that you know God. Because by the way, those of you who are like dressed really nicely today and come to all the services and like read your Bible every day, there's still like a bazillion hoops for you to jump through if you're trying to earn God's love. Like, are you the one that did it? Did you do it? Because I'll sit down and you can teach. I earned God's love. I'm the one that's got it righter than everyone else. So if you're like me, then you don't have to worry about it. I mean, you don't really believe that. No one is worthy of the mercies of the Lord. This boy realized that. And so the father didn't say, this is what you need to do, and you need to pay it back, and you need to make it right, and you need to prove yourself. Sometimes we're a little bit like that in a church sense. He said, don't say another word. The fact that you're here is all I need to know. And I wish we sent that message more to people who come and visit our services. Look, the fact that you're here says so much about your heart right now. Like, you just, let me go get a ring to put on your finger. Let me go get a robe and some sandals. And let's just, we're just going to, let me take you out to lunch. Like, I just want to celebrate the fact that you know you need God. Somebody comes to a Bible, you have a Bible study at your house, it's a neighbor, it's a family member or something, and you're like, oh, I hope this goes well. If they're there, it's going well. Like, thank you for being here. Thank you for showing an interest in things. We'll work through this together. He just sort of stops him, and he has this great sort of celebration, and that's what they do. In fact, they celebrate. And you know this, but that's how God feels. I know God feels that way when we sing. I want to go back and clarify that. You know, when we sing, it's good. Partaking the Lord's Supper is good. But man, the best thing you're going to do this week is welcome somebody who's struggling and looking to do better and help them find the Lord again. Now, here's where it gets interesting. That could be the end of the chapter, but then we learn about the other brother. But who's the other brother? Remember how this thing started in verses 1 and 2? This started with the Pharisees and scribes, who you're going to hear a lot about this week. This is the they from verse 7 with Zacchaeus. These are the ones who aren't going to that guy. They're certainly not going to commit their day to going to his house. Same guys, Luke 15, when Jesus is gathered together with tax collectors and sinners. Now, I'm going to read the story because this is important. But I want you to pick up with me in verse 25, and we'll read through verse 32. And let's see what the boy was missing. I'll make two observations, and then I think we're just about done. Verse 25. Now, his older brother was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he summoned one of the servants and began inquiring what these things could be. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father's killed the fattened calf because he received him back safe and sound. But he became angry and was not willing to go in. And his father came out and began pleading with him. His father is pleading with him. So interesting. But he answered and said to his father, look, for so many years I've been serving you. I've never neglected a command of yours, yet you've never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, you guys know that language. Parents know that language. Not my brother, this son of yours. Who, by the way, in case you forgot, devoured your wealth with prostitutes. You killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you've always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, for this brother of yours was dead and has begun to live and was lost and has been found. Okay, lots we could say, but I'll narrow it down to two thoughts. There are two mistakes that the other brother made. The other brother's in the in crowd. He's in the fellowship of his father. He's enjoying the blessings. But in the midst of that, he made two mistakes. The first mistake is he was focused on himself. Everything's about how it affects me. If I'm upset, if I'm uncomfortable, that's what this scene is about. Whatever's going on in your life, if you're upset, if you're uncomfortable, if you don't like it, everybody in the room needs to know it and react to that. He is focused on himself, and pronouns always give it away. So would you look at this with me? Listen to the pronouns. Pronouns always tell the story. Verse 29, here's what he says to his father. Look, for so many years, I've been serving you. I've never neglected a command of yours. You've never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours comes. Mistake number one is he's focused on what he gets, how it's going for him, and how everything is servicing him. Let me just say something about what it means to be in the church. We need to be careful about this among God's people. We worship at places that we love, that service us well, that fit what we're doing. We like things to go the way that we want them to. Let me tell you a little something about missions of mercy. You're going to hear it in the lesson this morning throughout the week. If this church became a soul-seeking, mission-oriented, capture the sheep, find the coins, welcome the son church, it is going to get messy. It's going to be uncomfortable. People are going to come in with interesting stories. There's going to be a lot of things that are not about you, that are going to require great patience on your part, that are going to require you to go out of your way to make them feel welcome. You say, I shook their hand 2 weeks ago. Okay, so what? They need you to go and embrace them and love them, and you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone to do that. But you have to sit there right now going, but that's the mission. That's the mission. The mission isn't about me. Look, I told you at the beginning, if the mission is for you to be saved and you're saved, then just go already. Like, don't you want to go to heaven? Just go. Why is God keeping you here? So the first mistake is this focus on himself. I'm going to talk about it later, but man, a few years ago we had a guy walk in with tattoos all, like somebody like tried out things on his face. His name is Gary. He's been a Christian now for 4 years, sits right there. But when he came in, we were like, I don't know about this. We've been working at a little mission in Tyler, Texas with some guys who are working through drug rehab. They go into it clean, and they have to stay clean through the 10-month system. And I think last Tuesday, Mark was, I think, the 18th baptism that's come out of that, and about half of them worship with us on Sundays, and most of them are members. And let me just tell you, not only do they have stories that kind of shock you, but they need attention like most of us don't even understand. Like they've never been loved. They don't even know what it means to be a part of a family. In fact, they all showed up for one Sunday and then ran off and wouldn't come back because they were so overwhelmed by not understanding what this meant. And we had to go out one at a time and tell them it was all going to be okay. But you know who that can't be about, though? I mean, it can't be about you. It has to be about God and others. So two mistakes that this son made that we must not make. One is focused on ourselves. The second is comparison. Who is that brother comparing himself to? The other brother. So he's going, I'm here, and he's here. So, like, I mean, look, can you see today? Anybody, do you need some glasses? Like, I'm here, he's here. I deserve the party. I deserve the goods. I mean, if you're going to get, but what's he thinking? He's thinking in terms of reward base, isn't he? He's thinking meritoriously, which we're taught all the time not to think like. He says, if I compare myself, and if you want to do that to make yourself feel good, if this week's out and you're like, you know, I guess I'm not very evangelistic and I'm not willing to get into the messes, and I'm, but you know, like compared to most people, I am, then I'm just going to be like, hit the pause button on that comment. Because that's what we always do to validate not excelling. How do you validate your bad attitude? Anybody ever have a bad attitude? I mean, well, I'm in Kentucky. Is there bad attitudes in Kentucky? How do you validate losing your temper or having a bad attitude or coming down on somebody? Well, it's easy. You compare yourself to them. You're better. They're worse. This is the way this is supposed to go. He's comparing himself to his brother. That's what they did in Luke 19. They compared themselves to Zacchaeus, and they're like, yeah, I'm not going over there. What should he have done? What should you do? Always. This is very humbling. This is very humbling. Always compare yourself to God. That's going to hurt, okay? It's going to hurt a lot, but it's the right kind of pain. It's the right kind. When I compare myself to others, to Gary, when he walked in that day, like, I win. But when I compare, and I'm only like 5'11", I don't know how much I can do here, but when I compare myself to God, like, it's kind of amazing that he even sees me. You know what I'm saying? When I compare my grace, my love for others, my heart to his heart, how does he even love me? You see what's happening, though? This is very important. You start to feel unworthy. I'm the one who doesn't deserve to be here. I'm the one who's so low that I'm not even worth coming after. And then you realize that he did. And then you understand his heart. Compare yourself to God. It hurts, but it's a good kind of pain. Because it lets me see, like I told you earlier, that story of the lost sheep. I thought, I'm not like Jesus, not like I should be. But first I realized I was the lost sheep, and like on Tuesdays I still kind of am. I don't mean like specifically on Tuesdays. I just mean that I wander around too, and he still has to come and get me. And I just want to be more like him and extend that mercy to others. Extend the mercy you have. I think the Pharisees didn't think they needed God's mercy, so they didn't know how to give it. We're going to talk about that in the worship hour. All right, I'm tempted to take, I don't know what that means, but, you know, I think I'm going to quit. All right, get ready. I want you to listen carefully. Just before I get up there, you're going to sing a song. We're going to record it, make copies, send it to your house. You're coming with me on Missions of Mercy. Let's sing about it in a little bit. Thank you guys for your attention.